And it's one of the larger financial decisions people will ever make.
What that does is it changes the entire consumer landscape.
They don't necessarily want their parents' advisors.
You need to find the pain point and show them where they're exposed.
Hi, this is the Insights Panel podcast from Brighthouse Financial, a podcast for financial professionals about retirement planning, bringing you insights from leading experts to help you stay ahead of the curve and have more productive conversations with your clients. My name is Amy He, and in this episode, we're talking about the Great Wealth Transfer, the roughly $30 trillion transfer of assets between baby boomers and their beneficiaries over the next several decades. The transfer will bring about significant opportunities as well as threats to advisors. I talk to our Insights panel experts on everything from the importance of millennials to getting an estate plan in place early. Sharing their expert insights, we have futurists and trend consultants at The Future Hunters, Erica Orange and Jared Wiener, and Dan Goldstein, behavioral economist and principal researcher at Microsoft Research. But first, I talked with advisor champion Mark Zinder and Jay Moreland, our client behavior coach. I asked them, what is the Great Wealth Transfer and what opportunities does it represent for advisors?
I'll take that one to start with. The Great Wealth Transfer is really a transfer of money from the Gen Xers to the millennials. There's a lot of money. It's estimated at about $30 trillion. And to give you an idea of how much that is, if you were to stack up $30 trillion in $1 bills, it would go all the way to the moon and back four times. So we're talking about a lot of money in motion coming up over the next decade. Well, anytime there's money in motion, there's an awesome opportunity for advisors to get a piece of that, especially because the advisor market seems to actually be shrinking a little bit as we have advisors retiring.
What are the threats that advisors may face from beneficiaries who stand to gain that wealth?
They don't necessarily want their parents' advisors. They want an advisor. If they want an advisor, they want an advisor that suits them. So it's important that the advisor recognize is that the threat is that their current business model will not be in line with what their next client is going to want to associate with. If we use our same business model for these younger individuals who are inheriting all of this money, this great wealth transfer, they might be looking to something that's a little bit more modern. So when I talk to advisors, I ask them to consider hiring younger advisors, focusing on social media, and reaching out to those individuals' children right now who may not have a lot of money, may not have any money, but start developing the relationship now, start formulating a social media and online strategy a little bit more robust is what they have, because this next generation is much more interested in communicating online through text, social media, than they are in the traditional sense of like their parents going in and sitting down with the advisor a couple of times a year.
And Jay, what I've also learned is you're exactly right. If we could get advisors to hire a young millennial advisor, and it's not just having them in the office, but when the parents come in with their children, what you should do is say, oh, hello, Drew. This is another advisor that worked with me. That's the millennial advisor. I would like you to sit down with him or her and spend some time with them and gather some information. And then I'm going to spend some time with your parents. And then we're going to meet together. And this helps the millennial become comfortable with someone that is their age.
That's a great point. And you almost need like two offerings in the office. You need kind of your traditional one for the traditional baby boom clients, and then you need the other offering for more of the millennials. And with that, there might be a different fee structure. Everything might change between it. But I think it's important that not only we have a younger advisor, but we have the right business model for that type of client.
So that's the children. What about other beneficiaries like spouses?
We talk about the wealth transfer between the baby boomers and their children, i.e. the millennials, but we haven't spoken yet about the transfer of a husband to maybe a wife. And the sad stat, we all know this, is the average male, the husband, will die 5 to 7 years before their wife does. And so the initial transfer is going to happen between the husband to the wife. And there is the real problem is because the stats say primarily that the wife, they're going to move to a different financial advisor. And how do we keep that money?
Yeah, and building off of what Mark said, I think that's great that you bring up that transfer between spouses, because that's the initial one there, is making sure that you speak each client's language they want to be spoken to, because usually in a relationship, one is the dominant person, the one that, you know, makes the appointments, usually makes the decisions, and we don't know which one's going to die first. So it's important that we reach out to the other ones and we speak to each individual the way that they want to be spoken to. For instance, I created a five-question assessment to help advisors understand their clients' communication preferences. And what we find is that the husband and wife or the partners oftentimes do not have the same communication preference. And this can empower advisors to know that when speaking to one, you speak this way, and then perhaps you follow up a few days later and make sure that the other one feels the love.
That was Mark and Jay on keeping the money in the family. Continuing on this theme, I also wanted to learn from trend consultants Jared and Erica how advisors can build relationships with millennials, who will inherit massive wealth but will have different financial and lifestyle habits than Gen Xers.
We've kind of hit millennial fatigue in a lot of ways. You know, we've studied them ad nauseum, but now we really need to understand the values, the attitudes, and even just the way that these younger brains are wired, because they're not only going to be the end recipients of this great wealth transfer, but they're going to be the clients for the advisors of tomorrow. So one of the other things I think we need to understand, or at least decouple, is myth from reality. And I think there are a lot of myths that circulate around millennials in particular. And when we look at millennial values and attitudes, we tend to assume that they might be a little bit more financially frivolous. They might not care as much. They might not have as deep financial literacy as some of the generations that preceded them. But in fact, this is actually a generation that cares a great deal about money and long-term savings. And even if they don't inherently know a lot about it, I think there's a curiosity to learn more and equip themselves with the knowledge that it takes to really make wise investment decisions as they go through their later years.
What are the challenges to talking about estate planning with millennials?
I also think when we talk about generational nuances and when we talk about kind of mass cultural change, there's one kind of common denominator that kind of runs through all generations, and that's kind of the taboo, kind of quote-unquote tabooness of certain topics. And death and money are two things that people are just across the board not comfortable talking about, that we tend to think that the younger generations, because they use social media and because it's kind of a I'll bear all parts of my soul online sort of mindset, that they're more comfortable talking about these topics, but in actuality, they're not. So just kind of when I was talking about decoupling myth from reality, I think we need to, this isn't a word, but like de-tabooify some of these sorts of things to get them comfortable talking about money in open forums, get them talking about the death of older family members, whenever that is. And granted, like, we are faced with the expanded mortality horizon. We don't necessarily know when that's going to happen, but we know that that's the one inevitability in life.
How can the advisor get these conversations started?
So especially on the role of advisors, just making those conversations much more comfortable, I think will make the great wealth transfer happen much more seamlessly.
So, you know, the idea that we get two or three generations at the table together and we start having that pragmatic conversation that Erica's talking about, which is, you know, yes, we can be comfortable talking about transitioning. We can be comfortable talking about inheritance. We can be comfortable talking about mortality, because ultimately, you know, a lot of these resources are going to change hands. So have you begun thinking about what that's going to look like? How are you going to spend that money? How are you going to save that money? That's a way that an advisor can actually maintain continuity of their business over the long term.
And I think communication is key in all of this, because when you look at an older generation and the family legacy that they want to leave, they might have one idea for how they want that money to be spent by younger generations. And the younger generations might have a completely different set of values and attitudes attached to that money. So having those conversations becomes really important, because the boomer might want it attached to philanthropy. The younger generation might want it attached to something like sustainability. And these are two very different ideas. And how to come to a consensus about how it's used, the way in which it's used, and in a way that resonates with the family values becomes important too.
Erica and Jared there on getting comfortable with talking about uncomfortable subjects. Finally, I talked with our behavioral economist, Dan Goldstein, to explore how advisors can help clients achieve better estate planning.
In terms of the magnitude of the decision, it's one of the larger financial decisions people will ever make. You rarely have that much money in your bank account for the recipient. It's, you know, the amounts transferred can be greater than the net worth of the person receiving them. And thinking about such a big decision is also easy to put off because it seems always attractive to say, you know, I'm going to think about this at a time when I can make a really good decision. But that can be a mistake, as we'll see.
Are there dangers to not estate planning early enough?
We procrastinate a lot of things. But in the case of wealth transfer, it's especially a problem because of this issue called cognitive decline. What is cognitive decline? Cognitive decline takes hold in later years. It means you lose your ability to solve certain kinds of problems, in particular financial problems, new problems. And about half of people in their 80s have some kind of cognitive decline. It's been shown experimentally that people will make mistakes about basic arithmetic problems, basic financial planning problems. People are more likely to do things like bounce checks or miss payments and so on as they age. So knowing that cognitive decline is going to be a reality for about half the population in the 80s, knowing that the longer you wait, the worse the decisions you're going to make, cognitive decline is really something that should be planned for. Advisors need to take an active step to get a plan in place before cognitive decline sets in. Now, that might be an awkward conversation to have. People might resist the idea that they need to plan for cognitive decline because they might feel like they're giving up control in the future. Or let's face it, it might just be difficult because we tend to live in the present and assume the future is going to be like the present to imagine a future in which, you know, you're not thinking as clearly as you used to.
What are practical steps advisors can take to get clients talking about estate planning?
So we need to find a way to get plans in place before they happen, both for the older generation and for the younger generation. And one nudge that's been suggested to do this is to schedule a checkup triggered by just a certain age. So say, for instance, hitting age 65, just make it the default that you meet with each of your clients and have a discussion about getting a wealth transfer plan in place. Luckily, you know, the advisor might not be the first person bringing up this topic. If you're age 65, you are living in a social network with other people who are also planning things like wills, beneficiaries, advanced directives for medical care. So the topic might have been brought up before. And so it seems natural, given that you're planning for all these other things related to aging, that you think about the wealth transfer topic as well. Another good idea is when having a meeting about wealth transfer, you know, starting at age 65, is end each appointment with another appointment for the next year, at which time you can review the beneficiaries, make sure nothing has changed, and so on. So I think that's a good way to get to it. Another piece of advice is that, you know, small incremental changes help people make big decisions. So it's a lot to sit down and do your entire end-of-life planning all at once. But if you get people to start by, for instance, just doing something as simple as having a conversation with their family about their final wishes, you know, just thinking a little bit about how they want things to go at their end of their life, what would be good scenarios, what would be bad scenarios, then, you know, people might be willing to take that step and then get on the train, so to speak, to take larger steps in the future. Another thing that can be effective is just find whether people are willing to think about it at some future date. So people might say, yeah, I think this is important. I want to think about it in January. Let's meet in January. So you basically you procrastinate making a decision, but you agree that you're going to make a decision at a future time. And hopefully in the time between now and then, you'll be able to think of things that you want for your later years.
That was Dan on the dangers of leaving estate planning too late. Thanks to Dan, as well as the rest of our panel, Jared, Erica, Mark, and Jay, for today's conversation on the risks and opportunities of the great wealth transfer. That's it for now, but don't forget to join us for the next episode when we tackle the annuities puzzle and discuss why annuities aren't more popular with Americans, despite their retirement benefits.
You can find other episodes of the Insights Panel podcast on brighthousefinancialpro.com/insightspanel or subscribe for free through any podcast app to receive new episodes direct to your mobile device. Stay ahead of the curve with the Insights Panel from Bright House Financial. Over the next several decades in North America, $30 trillion in assets are expected to pass from baby boomers to their heirs, according to an Accenture report on the Greater Wealth Transfer, capitalizing on the intergenerational shift in wealth. This information is brought to you courtesy of Bright House Financial, Inc. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers, and the information presented is for educational purposes only. Speakers were compensated for their participation.